I'll just wait for you. Okay, Kimmy, all yours.
Thank you, dear. All right, so hello and welcome to the Beacom's Group noon meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Kim, and I am an alcoholic. In an effort to lessen indirect distractions to others and to respect our speakers, you will not be able to unmute yourself during the meeting. So let's start this meeting with a moment of silence, followed by the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept things we cannot change, courage to change the things we can, and the wisdom to know the difference. AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other, and that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees from AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and to help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. And this is an open meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and all are welcome to attend, but we ask that only alcoholics participate. If you are new to AA or new to the Beacom Group, we strongly recommend home group membership and sponsorship. If you are new or not so new and looking for a sponsor, please put your name and number in the chat. If you have worked all 12 steps as outlined in the big books of Alcoholics Anonymous and have had a spiritual experience awakening and are willing to sponsor, please also put your name in the chat. The chat will remain open during the meeting, except when the speaker is sharing. Also, in the chat, you will find our AA quote of the day. The quote source will always be from AA literature. Our speaker will share for approximately 30 minutes on the step of the day, which I will time. Then we split into breakout rooms for small group discussions. Each group has a moderator who will divide the time equally and invite each person to share. Questions are encouraged during the sharing part of the meeting. When you share, please be sure your environment is quiet and free of distractions. Breakout room discussions end at 12:54, followed by day counts, announcements, and the Lord's Prayer. And I have asked Donna to read the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. Let me share that screen for you, Donna. There you go, love.
Great. Thank you so much. I'm Donna. I'm an alcoholic. The 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. One, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol and that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, we were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible when except we'd injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to prove our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will and for the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of all the steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all of our affairs.
Thank you so much, Donna. So today we will hear a talk on steps 4 and 5, focusing on fear and sex. Step 4 is made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. And step 5 is... hold on, let me see again. Because I didn't write it down and I am no good today. Admitted to God, to ourselves, and another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. So please give a warm welcome to a dear friend of mine who I love, Megan from Jackson, New Jersey, by way of Avon.
Thanks so much, Kim, and thanks for asking me to speak today. Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Megan. I am an alcoholic. My sobriety date is July 2nd, 2016. So I just celebrated 7 years. I have an in-person and a virtual home group, or so two home groups, of which I'm an active member of both. I have a sponsor. I'm available to sponsor. And I have to tell you that I am nervous, very nervous. When Kim had asked me to share my experience, strength, and hope on steps 4 and 5 and the fears and sex specifically, I balked for sure. I've taken speaking commitments, and I've even spoken on like topics, just not this topic. And the good thing is, though, is that I think it's pretty appropriate that I've got fear, and I'm talking about fear and how through this program and through the 4th step and the 5th step, I can work through it now. So I probably will read a little bit from the literature just to keep myself centered. So I'll start with, I was looking at the big book and looking at the 12 and 12 earlier today in preparation. And, you know, it there's on page 67, it talks about fear, you know, being bracketed in the list that it shows on page 67. And it says, this short word somehow touches about every aspect of our lives. It's an evil and corroding thread. The fabric of our existence was shot through with it. And that was me. From the time I can't even tell you. I won't say birth, because I don't think it was quite birth. But from the time I was very, very young, I only moved in self-centered fear. I was terrified of everything and everyone. And so fear most often drove my decisions. And, you know, I was very reactive. It corroded a lot of experiences for me as a young child. And then when I found alcohol, you know, it's a common theme in the rooms, like, you know, you find alcohol and you have that momentary release, that momentary solution of release from fear, release from care. And you know, it didn't last very long for me in terms of like individual instances. Like I would drink, and I'd get that release, and then I'd wake up the next morning, pick up the bat, and start beating myself over the head, and regret, and, you know, all that other stuff. Regret, what is it? Guilt, shame, and remorse were my constant companions when I was not drunk. And usually it was not only when I was not drunk, but when I was blacked out, that's when guilt, shame, and remorse maybe wasn't there because I was blacked out. Even when I was drunk, they were still there. I guess I always knew, even when I was drinking, that there had to be a better way. You know, my father is not a member of these rooms, but he has 48 years of sobriety. And so I knew that, like, from probably my early to mid 20s, I knew that my life would be better if alcohol wasn't in it. I just couldn't or didn't make the decision to put it down. And then by the end of my drinking, I couldn't. I definitely couldn't. I was addicted. So then I get sober, and I come into these rooms, and I listen out of the gift of desperation. I listen to some suggestions that, you know, involve getting a sponsor. And I was lucky enough to get a sponsor who does book work and agreed to take me through the steps. And 1, 2, and 3, I probably danced for a few months. I can't quite remember, but step 4, I sat. I was so afraid of step 4. Before step 4 happened, I was kind of looking forward to, because I wanted to see, like, I wanted to see what I wasn't seeing about myself. But when I actually had to step up and do it, the fear kicked in and the fear paralyzed me. And I think it took me 9 months to start it and probably another 6 to finish it. If not longer, because I think to do the 12 steps took me 3 years. So, but I did complete the steps. So, you know, just keep moving if you're going through them. And it was hard enough for me to put it down on paper, but to then have know that, like, step 5, right? I have to tell another human being about all of these things that I've done. And I have to get honest about my role in it. I can feel the fear now. And it's a few years ago. But, you know, I knew that more than sitting in the fear, I wanted to get better. And I knew that I had to do that. And over the time, you know, because I had been through steps 1, 2, and 3 and worked with my sponsor and, you know, had a sober network of women and had listened to, you know, all of you sharing in the meetings, you know, I had developed a trust and a reliance on my higher power. You know, as it says, it also says in the big book on page 68, that, you know, we don't, you know, self-reliance fails us, so we don't rely on self-reliance. We trust and rely upon God. And I definitely pulled from that to sit down with my sponsor and go over my fourth step. But I'm trying, you know, it's kind of funny. Like I said, I went through my fourth step. I talked about it with my sponsor. We identified the fears that I had, you know, just as an example, some of the ones, this isn't all of them, but some of them that came up were, I had a horrific fear of rejection, failure, abandonment, not being good enough. That was the tape in my head my whole life. I was never good enough. And, you know, it's funny because I learned in these rooms when someone shared from the podium, I thought I was the worst individual in the world. Like, there was literally nobody worse than me. And I learned in these rooms that was ego. So that's humbling, right? Because, like, you think, well, I don't have any ego because I'm clearly the worst person in the world, but you're still number one. So that was kind of cool. But one of the things that I think was great about step 5 was that I sat down and we went through each of the columns that I had or whatever. We identified the fears that I had. We came up with the words that are the opposite, right? Like, I have a fear of rejection, and acceptance is the opposite of that. And that, when I'm feeling that fear, the acceptance is what I focus on. That fear of failure, you know, is like, oh, well, the opposite is success. And I don't know if it was my sponsor or if it was someone else, but it wasn't just success, it was right doing. So it wasn't necessarily, it was just taking the next right step, you know, like having that fear of failure, but taking that step and keep going. And by doing those right actions, I got through that fear of failure. And with abandonment, you know, that's still a work in progress for me, but I definitely worked on that fear. For me, the opposite was community. You know, it was like allowing people to show up for me and trusting they will be there. And then they're there and, you know, reinforcing that belief over the fear. And I think, so for me, that's what the fear, like working through the fears really are. And you know, I've been dealing with a lot of fear the last year and a half. I shouldn't even say year and a half. I'm still, even in sobriety, I struggle a lot with self-centered fear. I have gotten much better at it as a result of coming into AA, working the steps, having a sponsor, talking to a sponsor, developing a network, all these tools that I've taken and I've actually used, and just keep moving forward, keep trying. So like, you know, when it comes to fear, I have stumbled, I have fallen in sobriety. I have sat down and not moved for a little bit, but I've always gotten back up because that's what you've taught me. You've taught me that you get up and you keep moving forward. And then when you're faced with another situation, maybe not so bad this time, you know, or it's more instinctual to rely on the tools that I've been given. So, but as I mentioned, the last year and a half has been really kind of crazy for me. And I have been faced with so much fear that I've been forced to use these tools on a daily basis. And that is a gift. And I might cry because I am so grateful for it. But you know, it was one of those things where like certain things popped up and like, I don't know if I can do this. I don't know what, I was lucky enough to take the actions to stay away from a drink, right? Because at the end of the day, that is the most important thing for me, is to not pick up that first drink. It doesn't mean that I didn't struggle. As my sponsor will tell you, but you know, just recently, literally in the last 24 hours, and I did want to share this, that the last 6 months have been personally very tough for me. I haven't experienced like external factors per se. It's just been very much in my own head, kind of dealing with certain life decisions that I've made or didn't make. That are coming to fruition now that I needed to address and handle. And I did. Like, in the last 6 months, I have stepped up and I have faced fears that 2 years ago, even sober 2 years ago, would not have done. And forget if I was drinking. I mean, I stuck my head so far in the sand. I think about some of the stuff. So I'm the guardian for my aunt. She has, she's at this point, she's end stage dementia, but back before I got sober, she had gotten diagnosed with dementia. And so for 3 years, 2.5, 3 years, I was still drinking after her diagnosis. And there were things that didn't get done. And there were things that fell apart. And I can't go back and change that. Kind of wish I could, but I can't. But what I did learn when I got sober, and I wouldn't have learned it if I wasn't in a program where people were willing to teach me. What I did learn was that you don't have, you know, you can look back if you want to, but what's most important is where you are now and what you're doing today to do the hard things or to do the right next right thing, as we say. And I think about how I've showed up for her, especially in the last 3 or 4 years, you know, when things have come up and I haven't stuck my head in the sand. I have been afraid and I've picked up the phone and I've called sober friends or I've called my sponsor, or I came to a meeting and I shared, or, and I think this is just as important, I listened to you. I have seen men and women experience things that you sometimes think people might not get through, right? Like these horrifying things. I've seen men and women in these rooms experience things like that and face that fear and do the next right thing and share about their pain and keep moving forward and work on acceptance. And because of that, these last 6 months, I've been able to do that. You know, I've showed up, I had some medical issues going on and I was able to, you know, advocate for myself. I was able to call the doctors when I was, you know, when the issues popped up, not a week later. There have been things that I had to deal with. My father lives in Florida and he lives in a residence that I'm responsible for. And there are issues with the residents, and I am handling that from New Jersey. You know, it's 1,800 miles away, but I'm here to show up for that because I've learned how to walk through fear. I do it better some days than others. And I'll move on from this, but I'll leave you with this, with this on the whole fear thing. And then I'll probably go back to fear. But the last 24 hours, I have literally lived in fear. Not the kind of like fear of my safety, but self-centered fear. I received, which would be good news yesterday, but for some reason, the tape that ran in my head when I was drinking started up. I had received a job offer, and rather than being excited about it, I was terrified that, like, these people don't know what they're doing. They didn't listen to me and my answers. They would never offer me the position. What's wrong with them? This can't be real. What's the catch? You know, these are the fears that I deal with on a regular basis, right? Rejection, failure, not being good enough. And what I did was I called my sponsor. She didn't pick up right away. And I breathed. I took a deep breath and I was like, all right, she will call me when she's ready, or not ready, but when she's available. God, until then, sit with me. And like, basically I was like, don't let me have a heart attack, but you know what I mean. And she called me and we talked through it. And then I talked through it with three other sober women, coworker, and my father in the span of 12 hours. Still wasn't sure. Woke up this morning paralyzed with anxiety. I was so uncomfortable. So what did I do? And Kim will know that I would not have done this even a few years ago. I called my sponsor again. And I talked to her. And as I talked to her, I realized that I knew what to do. That this fear wasn't something I couldn't get through, couldn't get past, that I was getting through it just by taking all of these actions. And then I dealt with it this morning. And I'll be honest with you, like even after the phone call to the department, I wasn't like thrilled, but I was at peace because I had faced a fear. And I had recognized that not only had I faced it, but I had done well facing it. And it was only because I have been taught to walk through it through these programs. And not if I had never done the steps, if I had never gone through step four, if I had never cleaned house and identified what it was that was holding me back, what it was that, you know, I was with the instincts that I was allowing to run riot. I don't know what would have happened. I don't even know if I would have gotten an offer, you know, because I would have been such a mess. So for me, I think, and for me personally, like you didn't live with me the last 24 hours. So it's hard to explain, but just to the realization that fear is a part of life. I'm always going to be afraid of something in some way, but it doesn't control me the way it used to. I have tools to work through it. I have people around me to help me. I ask for help, which was a fear in itself when I first came in. So that's really been, I guess, my experience, the experience, strength, and hope with the fear end of things, on the fourth step, and just how it showed up in my life, and how I have, my sobriety has given me the gift of being able to walk through it and walk through it faster, I think, than maybe if I didn't have a program. So as the big book says, now about sex. Not a topic I necessarily am super comfortable talking about, just in terms, but I am comfortable talking about, especially in terms of the fear part of it, with how fear and showed up in like sex and sex relations and romantic relationships, and how my reactions so horribly affected others and me. They, you know, not just others and not just me, but both. And it's kind of funny that this was the topic that I was asked to speak on, simply because only in the last like month or two, and you know, I've 7 years sober, only in the last month or two have I actually started to turn towards really digging into what, not only what the relations are, but like the relationships and the ideal that I wrote out when I did my fourth step, because I have an ideal. I don't live up to it. And I have, not that I have to, but like, if I want someone in my life that shows up with this, these qualities, I have to show up first. It's a lot of work and it is definitely scary, but I also think that, like, you know, the discussion that we've had with fear, it applies in this area, right? Because it's fear's fear. Regardless of whether you're afraid of financial insecurity, emotional insecurity, or sex, it doesn't matter. And knowing that, like, so I guess the biggest thing I can say with the whole sex relations is, like, when I did my fourth step, I was very afraid of relationships in general through most of my drinking. Towards the end of my drinking, I was still afraid of them. It was just my behaviors changed considerably in an unhealthy manner. So I had to address that in my fourth step. You know, I had to come clean about that. I had to recognize that, you know, I had a big role in the choices I made with the people I interacted with. That was kind of tough. And then I got sober. And I, you know, I did my work. I did my fourth step. I did my sex ideal. And I think it was probably not even 6 months later. I had met someone and it was great, but I still bought a lot of those old behaviors because I hadn't accepted who I was when I was drinking. When you bring old behaviors, I don't want to say it doesn't matter if you're sober or not, but like if I'm bringing my old behaviors from when I was a drunk into a sober relationship, it's not going to be that healthy. And it didn't work out. And then I shied away from it, right? Because now I'm afraid of it. Because again, as I mentioned, this is still an area that I do struggle with in terms of facing those fears. And only recently have felt like I can face those fears. But I also have to remember, and I looked over and I see we ask God to mold our ideas and ideals and help us live up to them. And I have to remember to ask God. I forget that a lot. Like I've taken a lot of steps, especially recently. You know, I pray to my higher power every morning. That wasn't working. So I started writing out prayers every morning because I needed like actual to see it, to try to get that connection. But I forget. I'm very self-centered. And so I forget about God. But I also know that I have made so much progress. And again, it goes back to facing the fears. And the reason I know this is, so earlier this week, what's happened this week? It's kind of crazy, both fear and sex. But earlier this week, I was at a literature meeting on Monday night, and the topic was loneliness. And that is a topic that I identify with significantly in the last 6 to 12 months. But what I realized and this kind of goes to fear, but I was thinking of it in terms of romantic relationships, and is as people were sharing, and again, like, I cannot emphasize enough how important listening to people share is. Like, I get so much out of when you share. I always, it doesn't matter who says what, I get something. And I so appreciate that. But anyway, it was about loneliness. And I was listening to people share. And I was like, oh, well, you know, rejection, like fear of rejection is a big thing. When I realized for the first time in my life that I no longer, made me cry, I no longer associate rejection with my worth. And that was a huge thing for me. Like, I was always like, I was rejected because I was worthless. Like, it didn't matter. Romantic relationships, a job, family, friends, didn't matter. But like, but to realize that, like, I no longer equate any rejection with my own self-worth. I don't know. To me, that's a huge gift of facing my fears, and kind of moving through the fourth step, being honest with somebody else. And I think that's what I'm really going to finish on that. That's okay. So thanks for letting me share.